Hi, and welcome to The Unschool Space, the podcast that's here to help parents embrace their personal journey into unschooling with all the joy and challenges it's likely to bring. Each episode, I talk with other parents about their experiences. This is episode 61, and I'm your host, Esther Jones. And if you're interested in hearing more about unschooling and mindful parenting, come find me on Instagram or on my website, which is esther-jones.com, and sign up for my newsletter. And there are still a couple of places left on my Mindful Deschooling course. So this 5-week course will give you all the information and tools that you need to move more easily from a place of worry and resistance to a place of trust and flow with your children. And that starts on Friday, May the 10th. This episode, I'm chatting with Dani Oliver, who lives in Texas with her husband and 2 children, who are almost 6 and 11. Dani shares her story of leaving New York City behind in search of something new for her and her family, and to live a more gentle and connected life, which they now do on their permaculture farm in Texas. We talk about the deschooling process and how, even though Dani was clear from the start that they would unschool, it still took her a lot of work to unravel the deep conditioning that she had from her Caribbean childhood and her school experiences. And there's so much in this episode, but I think the main message is that we have to trust and let go in order to really see our children and allow them to be who they are. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Hi, Dani. Thank you so much for your time today. It's lovely to have you here.
Hi, Esther. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it, especially from across the pond, getting together like this.
Fantastic. Oh, thank you. Yeah, so maybe you could just tell us a little bit about your family and how you came to unschooling.
So I have, I guess what people would call a traditional family of 4, but I also have a bonus adult who's 21 now, and I'm so proud of her because she's been with me for half of her, no, actually her entire life. But at the halfway point, she decided that I was a very important figure in her life. And so I have been mentoring her and unschooling her from close and from afar. And I love to see the person that she's become from me coaxing her to think on her own. And I do the same with my family. I have 2 biological right now. They are going on 6 and going on 11. And they have been unschooled from the very beginning. Some people say from birth, I say from utero, because in utero, we played music, we read stories, we talked, and we saw a real reaction in the movement. And, you know, if we'd sing a certain song, they'd move a certain way. So anytime we wanted to see a reaction, we just said a certain thing or spoke certain words, and immediately there were reactions. And then also with my son, he was speaking to me in utero. So it's like, oh, there's this extra voice in my head. Let me start talking back and, you know, introduce them to the world that they were preparing to come into. So for us, unschooling didn't come to us. We started with it.
Wonderful. Yeah. And tell us a little bit about your life there. It sounds really interesting.
Yeah. So we left New York City. That was where we originated. It was not a fun place to live at all. I know that a lot of young people want to go there for the glitz and the glam and the fast-paced life. But even as a person who grew up there, it was dealing with the cops. It was dealing with traffic. It was dealing with all these roadblocks to just living life. And especially like in my school experiences, very traumatic school experiences where everyone was trying to control you or trying to put you in a box, or, you know, mental health back in the day was not something important. So kids who were suffering from depression or who just needed to like rest, none of that was honored. Your childhood wasn't honored. And so when the time came that we had the opportunity to leave, I left while I was in labor and we drove straight to Texas and I gave birth on the way. We did it on our own. So I'm a home birther and a road birther, I guess, as well. And now we live on an acre, an orchard and farm that we're currently revitalizing because the snowpocalypse and drought kind of got in the way of our permaculture plans. But we're living every day for the moment. My kids, as we all know, are unschooled. They never stop learning. They are learning through video games. I know that's something that you've talked extensively about. I think it helps them with focus. I think it helps them with task completion. I think it helps them with being committed to something. It definitely has helped my son teach himself math. I started to teach my daughter math before I started to de-school. And with my son, he was just like, no, you're not going to teach me how to count. You're not going to teach me how to do anything. I'm going to teach you. And I'm like, okay. So he gives me math drills and his father math drills like all day. And we find that fascinating because to him, learning is teaching us. And so that's what our life is like. It's our kids like informing us about what is and isn't in the world, because a lot of the schooling that we got, we're now learning was BS. Like some of the things, not some, but a lot of the things that we were taught from textbooks were either incomplete or just not true. And then a lot of it has also changed, especially in the realm of science. So my kids are studying this stuff all day long, and conversation with them, it's like we have a whole segment of mommy doesn't know best, and I love it because it means that they're curious, they're exploring, and they're uncovering the mysteries of this world for themselves without a teacher.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's beautiful. Oh, there's so much that you've just talked about there to sort of pick up on. First of all, that the gaming and appreciating what's there, because there's this knee-jerk reaction, isn't there? Like, oh no, he's on a video game, I'm doing this wrong. And I know that a lot of parents enter in this sort of panic that they're getting it wrong, that this isn't how it should look. But, you know, often I tell people my now 18-year-old, he gamed a lot, particularly at that kind of 10 to 12 age. And now he rarely games because he doesn't really have time. But he sometimes misses it. He sometimes does it if he feels like he wants to sort of regulate. He'll go, oh, I'm going to do a little bit of that. And it gave him so much, and a lot of his interests came, they began there, like about history, world economics, just an amazing amount of his learning came from there and now has transformed. And that same dedication or rising to a challenge or those same things now, then they apply to other things. And like you're saying, like at school, and there's a lot of content, but actually the content isn't really the thing, is it? It's not what we need, or knowing how we learn, or being creative, innovative, right?
Yeah. The thing that I love about gaming, that I think a lot of parents maybe might not understand, is it's that deep focus and concentration. Like a lot of people talk about screen time, but to me, screen time is equivalent to class time, right? You go into class, you do 45 minutes of one thing, 45 minutes of another thing, 45 minutes of another thing. Kids don't ever get the chance to really dig their heels in, start something, really absorb it, really problem solve, really let their mind work through things, and then come to a natural conclusion, right? When we allow our kids to play video games, they get to dive in the same way. They get to dive in with their research on the game. A lot of it is the reason why my daughter reads today, because she wanted to play a game so badly that it required reading. So she's like, I've got to learn these words in order to complete a task, right? Where if I said, oh, you got an hour, she'd get into something, never really finish it, never really develop a passion for anything, and then she's off to the next thing. One of the most fascinating things that I got to do with my kids, I mean, there's always something fascinating, but this week was we went to Dinosaur World. And they spent 4 hours excavating a 40-foot dinosaur fossil. And just to sit there and watch them start a task and complete it without interrupting them, I still can't imagine the level of satisfaction that they have from that. And that's a task that you can do in video games, you can do in real life. But a lot of people who are in school systems, they don't think about how that time really helps their kids to make connections and then develop passions that they're going to take into other skills. And I guess because of my age, computers came up when I was young. I'm an 80s baby. So I've had computers. I bought my first computer, I think, when I was like 16. It was a DOS system. But I was playing games like The Game of Life and Sims. And these games helped me to regulate my interactions with people, helped me to learn design skills, helped me to learn timing. Like if I've got homework to do, like how can I get this task done in order to get this other task done? But a lot of the games that I enjoy playing are things where I'm doing things like farming or building a family or building a business. And so when I am stressed out from life, I'll go into the game world and do the things that like I want to do in real life.
Yeah.
But then it also inspires me. So recently I haven't been playing games and my kids ask me, Mommy, why aren't you playing games? It's like, well, because my Pokemon is named Ivy and Oliver. That's my kids. So I'm trying to catch them all. And then the tasks that I would be doing in video games, I'm doing out in the real world.
Right.
So, and it's more rewarding for me to do it out in the real world where I have something to show for it. I can feed my family off of it. And all of that I attribute to the time I spent in the game world, learning what it means to dedicate myself to a task, learning what it means to have a step one, a step two, a step three. And then I was like, you know what? I want to endeavor to do this for real. And the rest is history.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Yeah, I love that. And so you were saying about your de-schooling, how's that looked for you then? And clearly you embraced it right from the beginning. Have you noticed your own kind of process as you've gone through as the children get older and what de-schooling means to you?
Oh, absolutely. So de-schooling, I was listening to one of your episodes where you asked, you know, do you ever stop de-schooling? And I think the answer is fervently no. I tell my daughter all the time, I'm as old as you are. I'm not older than you. I'm not the authority over you. I know as much as you know, because I am starting over. I am reparenting myself. I guess you could say I started the process of de-schooling, but I didn't know what it was. I just knew I wanted to get away from the school system, the schoolishness, the idea of forcing kids into a box and not honoring them. From the time that my child was born, I told my partner, like, look, she's our roommate. She's not something that we own and can control, but someone who we need to negotiate with, who we need to honor how they're feeling, especially when they have big feelings. They didn't ask to be here. We brought them here. So if we treat her like a roommate or a housemate, how would we treat her differently as an adult than we would in our traditional Caribbean if she was a child, right? Caribbean traditional child, you have no place. You can't speak your mind. Do as I say, do. Go down the road of depression, right? If we look at you as you're an adult who lives in the house with us, who if you are a roommate, we can't hit you. You can't hit another grown person, right? We can't tell you no because you'll have the freedom to go get it. And then when we have disagreements where we're not in alignment with one another, we have to sit and talk about it, because we need to understand where each other is coming from. So we're very open with how we're feeling so that our kids know that we have big feelings just like you and we can talk about them. And so that was like sort of the beginning of my de-schooling process of really turning away from my upbringing, turning away from my schoolishness. And then when we moved out to Texas and we didn't have all the stressors of New York, where we didn't have things coming down on us left and right, we just had the wide open space. That's when a lot of the schoolishness started to come out. And I always liken this to my land, because every time we work the land and it rains, there's this trash that kind of comes up. Like we find glass and nails and books and just all this trash that the previous owners had buried there. It comes up. And so over time, these things were coming up within me as well. And she, when we moved out here, she was about 5 or 6. So that was the age where I was like, okay, it's time to put my 5Es to work. We've done enough playing around. Let's get to it, right? Because I didn't know what de-schooling was. I just knew I needed to honor my child. But I still was ready to get into the, let's have a lesson plan. Let's go down the rabbit hole. I had a very specific way of doing it. I call it 5Es. We look at the environment. I give you exposure, you engage with the material, you experiment with it, and then we have an endeavor. And I had this whole thing planned out that I wanted to do because I was so excited. And my daughter just looked at me like, no.
Oh, it's so familiar.
Not going to work. What are you trying to make me do right now? I want to play right now. And it brought up a lot of stuff in me there. I didn't know how to respond other than to hit. Now, I did not hit my child. I recognize this feeling and I turn to communities like your podcast, like Akilah's podcast, like Mom to Unschooling Mom to Mom's podcast. And I just started to listen. I was like, I've got these feelings. I don't know what to do with them. How can I help me help my kid? And in listening to Akilah, I started to understand what deschooling was. She got on the phone and spoke with me. And I just realized I needed to leave the house. So I would, when I got those feelings come up, I would walk away, just go outside and leave my kid be. And I have to tell you, one of the best tools in my deschooling arsenal is what we call rainy day protocol. During rainy day protocol, there is no work whatsoever. There is no learning whatsoever. We stop whatever we're doing. We get on the couch, cuddle, watch a show, and binge watch something. And in doing that, it helped me to realize that when I thought my kids were doing nothing, this so-called sitting on your behind, they were taking in so much information to the point where I just learned that me stepping back was all the deschooling that I needed to do and then work on me.
Yeah. Wow. It's huge, isn't it? That whole thing, like I'm the leader and we're going to be busy and they're going to be productive. And then when you get that no, or it clearly can't happen like that, you have to be so kind of humble with that. But then stepping back, and just as you're describing, one of those days where you do, in inverted commas, nothing. And if you allow yourself to see the beauty of that day, of the connection, of the little bits of learning, of the learning how to be with each other, of the learning that we're all enough, even though we're not striving today, we're still valid and worthy. I think, oh, it's so huge, isn't it? I think it just really touches something so, well, we were talking before the podcast, but so human, you know, and because we're so obsessed with that level of busyness, aren't we? And that we must all be producing and doing all the time. And I think often, yeah, at the risk of our connections and as you say, they're learning all the time. They can't actually stop because we are hardwired to learn all the time. That's what we do. And the walking away, of course, walking away is so huge as well. You don't have to fix anything. You don't have to solve anything. And walking away can be really hard if you are really feeling it. But the best thing sometimes, if you are feeling reactive, is get out of their space. Yes.
Get out of their way. Leave them alone. My son's favorite thing to do is play the game of life, not the actual game, but sitting at the window and watching what's happening outside on the land. And it literally puts us in a trance to just sit at these big windows that we have and just look outside. I mean, you can do within your park, but I feel like there's so much distractions at the park. Sitting at home in your comfort, in your space where you need nothing, and then you sit at the window and do nothing. We have observed bugs living their best lives, mating, flourishing, growing, changing. We've watched grasshoppers go from little teeny tiny things to these big, gigantic, locust-looking creatures. We catch roadrunners all the time, rainbow buntings, like just from sitting still for hours. There's so much learning to be had. To the point with one day we had a butterfly day where we just noticed there was like 10 butterfly and then 20 and then 40. And we're like, wait, we need to stop what we're doing and go and check this out. Went outside and it was uncountable the amount of butterflies that were on the north side of the house. And then we took a walk to see what else they were doing. And we found caterpillars. And then we found a swarm coming out of the trees. And we just were learning from taking the time to do nothing and observe. It's science in action.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah. And how about community where you are? Have you got a local community that you can sort of tap into?
So that's an interesting question, because when we were in New York, I ran a juicery and brewery. So we made beverages.
Yeah.
And we had a tap room where our customers were our community. So my daughter would be with us in the bar all the time. We had community events. We had like, not talent shows, but open mics, comedy shows and music. And so there were all these creative people, artists going through the space. There were drinking and laughing. And one unique thing about our space was, even though it was a bar, we allowed families and pregnant women. So like, we welcomed them in. So we had this real family community vibe going. And when we came out here, we started to make friends with people online and join an unschool group. But the vibe just wasn't there, didn't mesh with us. It's a different culture, different people. I'm New York. I'm in your face. I'm a business lady. I'm like, I'm going to say my opinion. And not in a way to overstep other people, but the way we do it in New York, where we all speak up, is not the way they do it in Texas, where everyone just kind of follows the leader. And I wasn't the leader. So that community didn't really work out for us. And it was pre-pandemic, so it was hard to take that loss. Mm. But through the pandemic, spending more time with my partner working from home and the kids growing up and us going out, we realized that we didn't need community in the way that we see people online being really hungry for community. Because when we felt like we wanted to be around people, we'd go to the park. And there'd be plenty of people at the park. And if there wasn't enough people at the park during the day, because, you know, as unschoolers, we get spaces to ourselves. We'd go in the evening when school was out and we'd make friends there. And parents would come up to me and talk to me and the kids would communicate with each other. They did camp one year and made friends that, even though they're 3 hours away now, come to our house and enjoy barbecues with us. We have family members who we hang out with. Some family members are 2 hours away, but we take the time to do that excursion to go see them because there's a journey in there. There's getting out of our space. And then we realize that there's a time where we feel social fatigue.
Yeah.
And we just don't want to. And I feel like when you have a community where you always have to do something, you don't get to honor that fatigue. And my daughter tells me, like, look, my social media is on zero. I am going to go into my room or into my closet. And so it allows us to say, when we want community, we can go find it. Mm. When we want to just sort of be together or by ourselves, we don't have a schedule or we don't have a certain requirement that we need to follow.
Yeah.
And the kids talk to adults all the time. They go to the grocery store and they have long conversations with them. The meat store where we're doing our book signing this month, they are friends with the staff. They come to the business meetings and they just speak. And that's community for us. Finding spaces where the kids can speak freely and it's honored. That's all. We don't need a structure, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. We all need the community that we need, don't we? It's easy to get kind of hung up on some idea of what a perfect community would look like. You know, like you said, you can find something and then it's not quite right. It doesn't quite gel. So yeah, I love what you're saying, just finding what works for you. And then of course, what you're saying there about your children just being out in the real world, you know, they don't need 30 other children their own age to interact with necessarily. Just, you know, being out in the adult world is so interesting for children, isn't it? And it's everything, really. I was reading a Peter Gray and book about children playing and how playing is really just this way to, you know, understand about life and just their, always that fascination, because they know they're going to grow up and enter that world. And so, yeah, I think it makes me laugh when people sort of ask, you know, well, what will they do in the real world? You think, well, they're out in the real world.
I like that you brought up play, because it just made me think about the juxtaposition between play and testing. You know, when our kids go out to the world and play, or just home playing, playing means I can try something and I can mess up at it or I can struggle with it. And it's okay. I'm going to keep playing, right? When they play together, there's this negotiation that happens. Like, you want to do it this way, but I want to do it that way. And it's okay. Like, we'll try it together. I'll try it alone. I'll see what you're doing and I'll become interested, or I'll vice versa, right? There's this natural sort of, what's the word, compromise happening in play. There's this natural sort of mistake and overcome that happens. Whereas when you test, it's like, I'm going to cram. And if I get it wrong, oh man, I'm a terrible person. Yeah. I'm no good. I'm going to fail in life. Like, that testing idea really takes away all the learning that we get in play. That's, you don't need a class on negotiation, right? You role play, right?
Yeah, that's funny, because one of the things that Peter Gray says is kind of precisely that, that when children are playing, they naturally, they look for a win-win solution because they don't want the game to end.
Yes.
It's in everybody's interest that this keeps going. And so nobody, even if there's a winner or a loser, when the rules are right, everyone generally comes out happy. It's when an adult comes in to start controlling the play that things tend to go wrong. But there's that. And then the other thing there, when there's no right or wrong or no shame, you know, in that testing piece, mm-hmm. not only does it limit the learning, I think, when you look at a curriculum, there's this amount to learn, and then we're going to test you on it. And like you said, when a child deep dives into something, they can go way beyond that. But that's a limit. You know, they can do so much more than that. But there's no shame in taking risks. There's no shame in getting it wrong. There's no shame in questioning something. It's a really much more joyful experience, isn't it? It's an open-minded experience.
Yeah. And you're right. It is very joyful. Because I, like, there are some people who will complain about the noise that their kids make. But to me, the noise they make is the most hilarious thing on the planet. Like, if you ask me, do you want to go to a comedy show or do you want to sit and listen to your kids talk to each other? I want to sit and listen to my kids because they come up with the most insane and yet still logical ideas on the face of the planet. And it just makes you chuckle to see how these ideas can come out of such a small package.
But yesterday, my son, he's quite limitless in his thinking. He was suggesting something and I could hear myself. I could hear that, you know, the adult, I could hear it in my own head that, no, that's a crazy idea. That can't possibly work. And then I sort of stopped myself for a moment and I tried to open my heart to this idea. I thought, oh, yeah, actually, it is sort of feasible. It was about a journey. I thought, actually, yeah, that kind of could work. And so sometimes you just, you know, that sort of automatic adult kind of box of like, oh, no, that doesn't make sense. I don't recognize that. That can't work. They're so much freer in their thinking. And if we pay attention, there's a lot to learn, isn't there, really? That sort of field of possibility.
Yeah. Just the other day, my son said to me, Mommy, you know what? I think that he was like, do you know what suspension is? I was like, from school. It's like, yes, son, I know what suspension is. And he was like, well, I think that suspension is the best thing that could ever happen to a kid who's in school. And I was like, what? Like, it caught me back, right? Like, suspension, good. Like, that was something I've always, you know, worked in school to avoid. And then he said, I think that we should go on the podcast and tell children that they should get suspended from school because then they're going to have the best life ever. And I felt all this like fear welling up in me. I was like, we can't go public with this kind of information. We're gonna start to write it out in the world. But I turned on the microphone and he expressed himself very eloquently. Like, if you get suspended from school, you get to go home and rest. Oh, wait, what? It's like, imagine if the teacher was just yelling at a kid to do something and the kid didn't feel like it. Like, they would get suspended, but then they can go home and they could sleep because they're tired. I'm like, yeah, that's a thing. He's like, well, then they can learn about peacocks if they want to. I was like, yeah, that's a thing. And then they can learn about trees that bleed. And I was like, oh, that's a thing.
Yeah.
And then they can learn about trees that are rainbows, like Jackson Pollock paintings. I was like, oh. That's the thing. And as he brought up these ideas on what kids could learn when they were home from school suspension, we looked it up. We researched all of it. And there was these most fascinating facts, even to the facts where what we were taught in school about atoms, how it looks more like the solar system with a nucleus and things floating around it. That's not true. That's not what atoms look like. But that's what we were taught in school. And we never got to go beyond one man's idea, who, you know, at the time was, you know, walking around with a sniff box. So it's like, it's one man's idea who's on something, and then they put in a textbook and that's the end all be all. That's Adams. And it's like, my kids have dived so deep into these thoughts and ideas and what ifs to find out what exists in the world and what's just their imagination. And he just wanted to share it with other kids. He's like, I want other kids to be this happy. And I'm just like,
Oh, that's amazing. That's lovely. You know, that's reminded me of a very sad thread that I came across the other day on a kind of it was some forum where a mother was saying that her 15-year-old daughter had asked for a day off school because she felt very tired, and the mother had said, no, you need to go in. And she was asking, did I do the right thing? And everyone said, yes, of course you did. She learns now that she can just take a day off whenever she wants. What kind of adult will she be? And it was so harsh, except for a couple of dissenting voices saying, let her have a rest. And I thought, it's interesting, isn't it? Because when we get to like 40, 30, 40, 50, and people are going, no, I'm leaving the rat race, I'm having rest now. But we're like, yes, well done. And we're encouraged to understand what we need and self-care. And but children don't get that rest. Or like your son saying, they don't get that ability to say, no, you know, this isn't working for me. I'm going to need to take a step back now and some time to just, you know, they're expected to just keep going. And at this rhythm somehow.
Just the go, go, constant go, go, go. And that's something that I've talked about in therapy with my therapist. The fact that there was no rest in my childhood, because she would always ask me, like, you know, where was your happy place when you were a child? And I was like, I had no happy place. There was no day off. It was 5 days of school, 5 days of homework, all day dance school on Saturday, all day church on Sunday. And that was, it was just every minute was planned. And if you had a free minute, there was homework or a project that needed to be done, or rehearsal that needed to be done. And so that rest never came, but the depression came, but the weight gain came, the dysregulation came, then the people making fun of you came. It was like, oh, you can't compete at this level, so we're going to ostracize you. And when I spoke up for myself and said, this does not work, I became the black sheep of my family, because it was either that or suicide would win. And I'm sorry to bring up such a dark subject, but it's a real thing that humans battle with. Like, if we can't see an exit or we can't get respite, then that ultimate shut the game down is where our mind goes, right? Like, I'm done playing this simulation because I'm tired. And I don't ever want my kids to feel that way. Like, they need to end the simulation. When they need to end their video games, good. They know, they get to a place where they're like, I'm done with this. I want to do something else. But when they want to end the whole big simulation, I think we really need to take a look at that, and look at that, especially in teenagers in our society, because we are pushing them for what? Pushing them for a grade, right?
Yeah.
Pushing them to get into that school for what? I don't know what it's like in the UK, but in the US, we have so many college educated people who are unemployed or underemployed. So for what? We're paying these debts. For what? I can't in my right mind say to my kids, grind and do the thing to the point where it doesn't feel good because you're going to get X. Our parents told us that because they got something, but we're not getting anything from it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really shifted in the world generation to generation. Something you're saying there, Danny, though, I think is so important. And it's this idea that we can help allow our children to live into who they are now and not deny that, allowing them to make their own little choices. And it really could be what they're having for breakfast, what time they're getting up, are they playing a video game? And feeling into that connection and going, you know what? No. Or you know what? Yeah. Constantly, so that as they go through life, I often think about this. So I think unschooling is this, like, embracing this incredible uncertainty. But at the same time, you're almost creating the only certainty that you can, maybe, which is a child who can keep checking in and keep going, yeah, it's a yes or it's a no. And they can keep doing that. And sometimes they might put a foot wrong, but they can come back again. So I always think, well, maybe as long as their next step feels coherent to them and who they are and aligned with them, I'm not sure what more you can do for your child. But because we're all so scared, I think it's easy. People want to buy into a system that gives something definite at the end, even when we can really see that it's not working.
Yes.
And even, as you say, yes, the huge mental health toll that that system, with so much stress in it. Yeah, it's huge, really. Before we go on, I don't want to forget, but can you tell us about your book, Danny?
Yeah, this is a great segue into it, because that is the inspiration for the book, is letting people know that, like, that uncertainty and taking that time, like, it's going to lead to something better than what you think you've been promised. And it's going to be something that's heart-centered. It's going to be something that feels good to you. Because we could have stayed in New York, you know, we could have stayed there. We could have dealt with the trash. We could have dealt with the cops. We could have dealt with the noise, but it didn't feel good. And when we said, this doesn't feel good, and put our foot down and left, we left with so much uncertainty. We had nowhere to live. We were in labor. Who moves on the day that they go into full-blown labor, right? But we said, you know what? We have enough information about what feels good and about what we need to move forward that we're going to do it. We have a map, so we know where we're going. We've done the Bradley classes. Our midwife is on notice. We're going to do this. We're going to go. And on the road, there was uncertainty. I didn't know when we would give birth, but we did. By the end of the first night traveling, baby was ready. We crossed the Mason-Dixon line and he said, I'm here. We went on the road the next day, and then we hit some road debris. And so we had a little road accident. More uncertainty. What do? You take it one step at a time. You go the direction you want to head. A thing comes up, you deal with it, and then you keep on. And that's what the book is about. It's about taking it one step at a time, one page at a time, and really sitting in the moment. You did a thing, you're on a journey, a thing happened, right? We went from this cluttered space to this wide open space. And we just sit with it, right? And then the mom and dad are doing things all over the place. And the kids are just watching, like, you guys are crazy. You guys are doing a bunch of things. But you know what? They've seen structures go up. They've seen their parents build these structures. And they know, well, I can build too. I can make the things that I need too, right? And then they see seeds go into the ground. And wait, I can eat that? I can go outside every day and there's blueberries for me. Every day and there's strawberries for me. So that's what the book about. It's about going through this journey of life unschooled, uninterrupted, and then realizing that there's moments where you can stop and take inventory of what your life includes and how that makes you feel and how you can keep going with it, right? By the end of the book, bellies are full from the harvest. There's the dark night sky where you can see everything. And it's just like, this makes me feel like I want to keep going, as opposed to the feeling I had before, where it's like, exit the matrix. That's the inspiration for the book. That's the message I'm trying to convey in the book. With Unschool Pages and Unschool Discoveries, what we really try to do is showcase, not teach, not tell, not persuade, but showcase what unschooling could be like. Because there's so many people who are just in the rat race. Mothers talk to me, like old friends of mine whose kids just say to them, can I just like do my work and turn it in, but like never go to school? And they laugh when they restate those kids' words because they realize they're talking to me.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, yeah, you can do that, right? And the thing that you're worried about, you will address it when it comes up. There's no need to worry about it now and have this strong control over a life that you don't know which direction is going to go out of fear, where you can just let that stuff go. And when it comes up, deal with it.
Do you know, I read this article, I think it was yesterday, it was about worry and about how 90% of the things we worry about don't come up. And then for that 10%, it was something like 80% of people said they dealt with it so much better than they thought they would. And I think unschooling, a lot of it is getting beyond that fear and going, like finding that place of trust. Oh, the book sounds lovely. Sorry, let's stay with the book for the moment, though. It sounds lovely. I'll put a link to it in the podcast notes.
Hey, thank you so much. Even with the book, we have a companion to it. It's the Create Your Own Adventure book. Because I felt like I was too much in control of the original book. And I was like, that's not what unschooling is about. So we did one where we took all the color out and we took all the words out. And so it's just the pictures, and kids can go in there and write their own story, write it their own way. Because when my son reads the book, his version of the book is completely different. It's hilarious. I love it. But his version is different. I was like, you know what? Every kid should have that opportunity to tell the story their own way. There's places where they can do puzzles, places where they can draw in their own family pictures. So they can say that this is my story. This is my home. Oh, these are my dreams. And they, you create your own. And I wanted to make sure that we gave that option so that like kids could dive into the book and just like stay with it. Have that moment where it's like, I want to be creative. And the hardest thing about this book has been categorizing it. Like, is it a children's book or is it an adult book? And for me, it's a family book. And it's just as much fiction for some people as it's exactly nonfiction for my family. It's memoir for us. But for some people, it's fiction. It's imaginary. It can't really happen. And so that's why it's important for me to like get the message out that it's not just a children's book, because one, parents are reading it to their kids. And there's food for thought in there for adults. And one of the most interesting feedback that I've received about the book is when folks give it to moms to be, or people who are at the point where they're thinking about having children. And they're just like, I didn't even know. I didn't know this was an option in life. And that to me is so heartwarming.
Yeah, I think that's really important to share the stories, because fear is often of the unknown, isn't it? The fear is of, because we don't know what it is. And I think to sort of share stories of possibility, of what it can look like, that we don't have to take that path, but we can make it our own, is so important. Well, before we finish, Danny, I did want to ask you something, which was about your permaculture. I was just really curious as to whether you had, is that something you had experience in, or did you just sort of dive into that?
Oh, we had experience in nothing. Well, it's weird to say that we had no experience. When I started this journey, my mom thought I was possessed by my ancestors, because she didn't teach me any of this stuff, but it's what my great-grandmother and great-great-grandmother, it's how they lived. They worked their land. They were entrepreneurs. They went out and did their business, sold their products, and then they made everything from scratch. They were what we call homesteaders. And I wasn't raised, so I was raised back and forth in St. Martin, but by the time that I came around, things were a lot more modernized. So I didn't really get to see what she saw growing up. So as a grown person, my mother watching me juice and create herb concoctions and brew and ferment this stuff and then start to plant and, you know, say, I need my own land. And when they came to visit, they were like, this is like being home in the Caribbean because of the bush.
Oh, wow.
So having had experience, I mean, DNA genetically in our crystals where we store memory from lifetimes, yes, but actual in this lifetime experience, no, I had none.
It sounds like a big unschool experience for you then.
Exactly. It's all adult unschooling.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, so you didn't need to learn that in the classroom. You just jumped in. Yeah, oh, fantastic.
We learned nothing about health and actual nature in school. Nothing about our health, nothing about our bodies, nothing about how the land works. Nada. None of that was in school.
Yeah. Oh, well, before we go, Danny, any advice or just sort of words that you would say to somebody who's about to sort of thinking about setting off on this journey or just started?
Anyone who's starting off, let it go. Let it go. Let it go. Let it go.
Let it go.
Yeah.
Love it.
That's the best thing I can tell you. And that's the hardest thing. So if starting out can make a big sign in their house that says, let it go. And when they feel like not letting it go, just figuring out for themselves how they can let it go. They're going to model to their kids how to let go, how to figure yourself out, how to self-regulate. And how to arrive at something that feels good for you. And kids are watching. Like, you don't know. They are watching everything. They don't miss a beat. So if they can see their parents go through this moment of doubt and fear and look at the sign and let it go, and then watch how their parents go through the motions of letting it go. I think that would be my best advice for someone starting out.
I think that's fantastic advice. Absolutely. Yeah, let it go. And doing that in whatever way you can. And we really try to grasp onto things, don't we? But what does that look like for you to actually let go? That's fantastic.
Let go of the broom. Don't sweep the floor.
Yeah.
Let go of the broom.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Everyone needs that sign. Put it on your fridge, wherever. Let it go. It probably isn't important. You probably won't even remember tomorrow what it was you were so cross about or so anxious about.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much, Dani. Yeah. It's been really lovely chatting with you.
Yes. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
And I love your podcast. Thank you so much for doing it. Oh my gosh. It's good to hear the words that you think in your head from someone else, especially like on the other side of the world. It's like, oh, I'm not crazy. Yes. Yeah. I was just thinking about that. Yes, I was just talking about that. So yeah. Thank you so much for doing the work that you do. I appreciate you.
Oh, thank you, Dani. Yeah, there's such a joy in talking to people from all over the world and finding that we could probably finish each other's sentences. Fantastic. Oh, well, thank you, Dani. And yeah, much love to your family. And carry on with your good work there.
Thank you so much.
Bye.